The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
I've just been dealing with so many different things right now. I'm going to get to the tape and just evaluate everything, and I'll leave it at that. We're keeping everything on the table over the next couple of days.
So you're not committing to Zach as your starter for Sunday?
Not right now. Not until I'm done evaluating everything. Everything needs to be evaluated. It's just when you put up 100 yards of offense, I don't care how good New England is, and they are good. It's unacceptable. It's not NFL football. And so everything is just being talked about. How can we be better? How can we be better as coaches? How can we call the game better? How can we game plan better? How can we execute better? How can we change practice? So, the quarterback is part of a pile of stuff that's being talked about.
That pile of stuff is dog shit. That's what he called it on Sunday after the game. Sorry, enjoy your breakfast, but that's what it is. That's what it was. That's what it will be unless they make some major changes. And can you imagine that statement, that observation being made about any other guy that we regard as a franchise quarterback? And obviously we don't regard Zach Wilson as one. We regard him as a guy who could become one, who entered the league with very high expectations, second overall pick in the 2021 draft. But it's clear now, and I'm sure his attitude after the game, both at the podium and in the locker room, SNY reported that he was walking around like he's not the problem, to get back to the point we were making last segment. How do you conduct yourself after a game like that? What messages, what vibes are you giving off to your teammates when you have the C on your jersey? That's all very relevant. And I think that for the quarterback position, especially, Chris, it's a blend of what does the film show me and what is my team leader doing for me? How is he motivating or otherwise the players in the locker room? And it's all, today's the day. They're going to figure it out because tomorrow they start practicing in earnest for a visit from the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I think it sounds like, and we know the play was not good. We get that. We understand, and that's been scrutinized over, you know, the stretch of, I would like to say, him being 5-2 as a starter, as a quarterback, against some of the best defenses in football. All right, but at the same time, it sounds like it's more of an attack on what you're talking about than anything. It's like the way he carries himself, the leadership, you know, maybe being a little too cocky, not humble enough. You know, maybe that's what it is. He certainly wasn't laughing or jovial in any way in the post-game press conference. So I don't know what, you know, people view as he's walking around acting like it's not his fault. You know, is he, you know, again, now Zach Wilson's become kind of the jump on guy. We jump on him even when he plays good and they win. So that's where I'd like to know what they mean by he's walking around acting like that. Now, again, Would I have liked his comment?
And again, that was a report. That was a report right. from Connor Hughes of SNY
yeah,
based on
I know.
The name sources that there are people in the locker room who are rubbed the wrong way by how he's conducting himself. So we don't know.
Yeah,
we don't
exactly.
know. We didn't get the benefit of a shot.
Right.
Like
show
the one
me a
we
picture.
Had
show
Murray
me him smiling. Show me him joking around. And you know, again, I'm sure people are saying things like that. That's what happens after a bad loss. The Jets have too many people that talk in their locker room anyways. Garrett Wilson talks like he's been to 7 Pro Bowls and he's been a 9-time All-Pro, and he's like the leader of the team, and that's unacceptable as a rookie. Elijah Moore acts like he's like Randy Moss and should be able to do whatever he wants. So they have issues there. That'd be the first thing. They have some young guys that talk too much, and that would be the first thing.
Who should go tell them to shut up, though? Who should go tell them to
the
shut
head
up?
Coach,
isn't that what the quarterback
should do? Well, no, the head coach has to set the culture there a little bit of like, this is the way it is here. And hey, Garrett Wilson, we love you, but you give too many State of the Union addresses for our football team. You've been here for 7 minutes, and you've given 7 different unions of the address, addressing the union here over your career. Stop. So it's a little much that way. But it wasn't good. And his answer after is what's really jumping off here, right?
Because
last question.
That's the no-brainer.
Did you let the team down? No. He wasn't smiling or anything. He should have answered it differently. There's no doubt. Damn. Yeah, we feel like we let the defense down. Damn, we let ourselves down. We stunk today. I let myself down. Why stunk? We all stunk. Of course we let the defense down. They only let up 3 points. He should have said that. But also, at the same time, he looked like a guy that was pissed off and not happy and just wanted to get done with the press conference and showed like he cared a little bit, too. So that's where, you know, again, we all wanted our both ways here sometimes. But, yeah, I didn't like that look for Zach Wilson either. I'm not trying to defend that.
No, and you're right. It's not like he was laughing and smiling. He wasn't. Right. He wasn't. Russell Wilson jubilant after losing a game, which we've seen a few times this year. But it's a very easy thing to do. It's a very easy thing to say. Do you feel like you let the defense down? Yes. Yes, it's obvious. Everybody knows when you only score 3 points, when you have 2 yards in the second half, of course you've let the defense down. The defense did everything in its power to win that game. So why not just admit it? That's what's odd to me. And
yeah.
I said this yesterday, Chris. If you look like you're 12, you can't act like you're 12.
Yeah, I hear
you.
That's
you have to act like you're 32 if you look like you're 12. And this comes down to media training. This isn't just the kid's fault. Just like you said with Garrett Wilson, you need to have people in the organization who understand how to communicate with the players when it relates to how the players communicate with the world. And that's where the PR department becomes critical. It's not just the coach. You've got to have people who understand the impact of messaging, who understand the things that could be said and how they would be received by the media, especially in New York, for crying out loud. If any teams in the NFL need an expert high-level PR function, it's the New York teams because they are constantly in the middle of the minefield. Everyone's looking for that soundbite, for that thing that can be used to blow up the back pages of the tabloids. So you've got to have these guys wired to never say anything that can take on a life of its own. So, again, the individual players are responsible for the things that come out of their mouths, but these billion-dollar organizations need to have people in place who can coach them, not just on how to play on the field, but what to say and what not to say off the field.
Yeah, I totally agree there. You know, totally agree. And you know, like we talked about with, like, Shanahan and the 49ers, Saleh and them, they want those passionate, you know, no questions asked, let's go type of guys. And I love that. There's no doubt. They got some guys that got some fire on their football team, for sure. But, yeah, between the guys that are in charge of, you know, shepherding the players to talk to the media, and then the tone in which – you know, the player, the head coach sets about, you know, how we're going to talk in front of the media and all that. It is an organizational thing. So, you know, they could handle some things differently for sure. Now, we could talk about what's going on the field. The field has not been pretty. We get that. It's not. It's not pretty. Zach Wilson, was that good? No, absolutely not. You know, that's the problem is we have 2 Patriot games sandwiched in between, you know, 1 good win. And the Patriots, you know, Wilson didn't play good in the first matchup, had the 3 interceptions, and 2 of them which were stupid, played really, really good against the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen. They win that football game. And then, of course, you know, this past Sunday was bad. And, you know, this is where, again, Mike, I just want to set this up. It wasn't good. I understand that. But I sit there and watch the tape yesterday, and again, I don't know. Maybe Zach Wilson's not that smart. Maybe they're not adding plays in the playbook. Maybe there's things going on that I don't know about. But I sit and watch the tape, and I go, I'm not sitting here going, oh, man, people are wide open everywhere, and he's really messing this up. Here's the first play of the game. I mean, it's locked. Nobody. Nothing. I mean, when I say nothing, Mike, there is nothing. Here we go. Where does he throw this ball? So there's a lot of this the whole game long. And then the Jets fans go, Zach Wilson sucks. Here we go. Here's another down. He wants to throw it down here because they think they have a pick play. The guy plays it great because they got a guy inside waiting for the other guy. So he doesn't have to dive in. There's nothing. And he has 0.4 seconds to throw the ball. Zach Wilson sucks. Okay. Now next play. Here we go. Oh, third down. Our second and 40. Nobody's open. Makes a scramble for 15 yards. Zach Wilson sucks. Okay. Now we get into the next one. Oh, a laser down the middle into a 30-mile-per-hour wind. Zach Wilson sucks. I mean, he sucks. I mean, he really does. He does. So there we go. All right, and now we got a third and seven. It's an all-out blitz. They have one guy not blocked. He's got to throw it a little early. Yeah, I'd like him to throw that nice. He doesn't. Right. Here's a second and nine. Oh, here's the Rich Samini play that he left on Twitter. He's talking about Denzel Mims is open down the middle of the field. Here's the Dan Orlovsky play on Twitter. Rewind this, please, Courtney, if we can, guys, back here. You know, first off, this is where I'd like to really, like, let's just pause it here for a second. Because this became a big thing on social media yesterday. And I think it's a low blow by Dan Orlovsky. Does the quarterback know the playbook? I mean, Dan Orlovsky didn't know the route the guy was running until the second time he went through it. But he was going to question whether Zach Wilson knew the playbook. It's a low blow. It's a low blow. And he thinks, and he explains on the video, the receiver here on the bottom, Denzel Mims, is running a big post, a deep post down the middle. Doesn't look like a deep post to me. Looks like a skinny post, a glance route. And that's why he threw the ball like this. I'm guessing there was a rule, man-to-man coverage, we want you to throw the skinny post. The guy ran the route like a skinny post, right? Garrett Wilson, he obviously feels like he's open there. I don't think that's open. And see, there we go. That's not acceptable reaction either. So what I want to say here, again, this is where I'm talking about too, though. I mean, that's not wide open. And his rules, in a lot of ways, probably said to play that. But, Mike, my point is he did miss some throws. It's not great. But I don't come away looking at this going, oh, my gosh, people are everywhere and he's missing it. I don't. Two of the three throws that everybody's making fun of that he missed, I want to go, the guy was going to catch it a yard behind the line of scrimmage and go nowhere, and we're making that a big deal. So it's a little overblown. I know it's not great. He's got to handle himself better, certainly, but he seems to be a guy that people really want to jump on too, and that's where I think it's adding to this conversation as well.
And this is where it can be a little dangerous in the media. You want to be very entertaining. You want to create a moment organically and authentically that people are like, wow, this person really knows his stuff. And Orlovsky made it clear a couple of weeks ago he wants to get into coaching at some point. So he's got an interest both in being as entertaining as he can be and also making people think he can be a pretty good coach, because he told Dan Patrick 2 weeks ago he wants to at some point. He was a little too candid for my liking with his long-term aspirations. So my point is, if you're going to do it, you got to get it right. You got to be buttoned up. It's got to be 100%. There can't be any room for misinterpretation. If you're going to make grand statements, they got to be accurate.
Well, you can't make assumptions, right?
On this.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Mike,
you've got to at least acknowledge I'm making an assumption.
That's
stating it like it's absolute fact.
Exactly. That's the problem. I do this all the time. Hey, I make videos. You see them on social media. I'm not sure exactly what this guy's rule is. I could be wrong. He might have had to do this or he might have had to do that. I explain that. I say that. You know, that's what you have to do. But you can't start the video going, first off, the guy has to run the in cut the right way, and then go, oh, wait, actually, he's not even running that route. And now then talk about the quarterback doesn't know the play. And that's where I don't love it. And I've got experience with this play. So I've been in offenses where this play becomes this skinny post. And I want everybody to focus on the guy down low. And if we can rewind it again here just to show it, or maybe just let it go. The guy on the bottom runs a route, boom, puts his foot in the ground, and turns his head like he's expecting the ball. You know, Dan's trying to make a point, and Dan's great. I'm not trying to be down on Dan here. I'm just talking about a little bit of an unfair thing I think he does here to Zach Wilson to add fuel to the fire, and I don't think it's correct here. That's my biggest thing. And, you know, he's trying to make a point that the guy in the bottom should be running a deep post and you should never be throwing this, and I don't think it's a deep post. I don't think that the Jets run skinny posts where Zach Wilson throws this ball a lot. This is a big part of their offense. And so that's where I don't love that, Mike, and you're right. That's where you got to be careful. You know, you just set a narrative on fire and everybody just runs with it and goes, oh, yeah, he doesn't know the playbook. And that's not fair to say. He's not out there like doing stupid stuff over and over like that.
This reminds me, it's a different context, but it reminds me of the pouncing on Russell Wilson after they lost that awful Thursday night
game. A little bit.
Like there's an opening. There's blood in the water. So let's all, as media, dive in, or let's throw more chum in the water. The fans are the sharks. The people consuming the content are the sharks, and we know there's blood in the water. Let's throw as many fish heads as we can in there, even if we probably either should have been doing it all along and we're holding our bucket of chum until the most opportune time, or you know, we're just not really. We've got fake fish heads we're throwing into the water and we're trying to fool the sharks because it just felt like this is the time to pounce on Zach Wilson. Now, he brought a lot of it on himself.
He did.
But still,
no question.
After Sunday's game, it just felt like the time to just assume, like you said, he sucks. And we're going to do everything we can to prove he sucks, even if we're taking some unfair liberties with the film in an effort to prove that he sucks.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, and I know everybody thinks like, he ranked Zach Wilson as the number one quarterback, so he's always going to defend him. What are you? Then you don't know me. You don't listen. You're just seeing. I don't hold back anything for anybody. I mean, gosh, I'm the guy that sit here and is Aaron Rodgers the greatest thing ever. Who's been more critical of Aaron Rodgers over the last year than me? Right, Mike? I mean, again, you know me well enough to know that I'm going to call it like I see it. I'm not going to continue to BS to just cover up an assessment I made two, three years ago. I like we always say, I like being right. At some point, I'd like to go, oh, you know what? I was wrong. That guy's an idiot. And now let's watch how bad this player is and evaluate it. So I'm not sitting here going to try to do that. I think the other thing that needs to be taken into account here is the style of football the Jets are trying to play right now. Robert Saleh won a Super Bowl in Seattle playing this style of football. They're not necessarily looking to play a game of throw the ball for 300 yards. They're playing through their defense. They want to run the ball. And just like Russell Wilson did in that Super Bowl all year, they're looking for Zach Wilson to make two, three, four throws every game to just kind of put them over the edge and go, okay, defense, run the ball. You make a few big plays, we'll win this game. That's what they've done, and they've gone 5-2. The Patriots were all over their stuff, let alone he was the leading rusher. They couldn't run the ball, and they couldn't protect anything. Was he good? No, I get it. But for everybody just to go calling for his head and then add fuel to the fire, I just think it's been a little bit over the top. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so question then,
yeah.
Chris. If the New York Jets under Robert Saleh are trying to duplicate what the Seahawks did,
yeah,
why use the second overall pick on Zach Wilson? Why not Patrick Surtain? Why not trade down? You know, why not get somebody else and not have? Because what are you doing in New York? You're bringing a savior at the quarterback position to town. They're still waiting for Joe Namath. So if you really are, and I'm not doubting you. I'm just saying.
No, I hear you. I hear you.
It doesn't make sense. They shouldn't have drafted him.
Well, they're playing the long play here, too. You know, it's more about than just right
Micah
now.
Micah Parsons.
Well,
they could have had Micah Parsons.
You know, again, they've got a lot of the pieces in place that we like and that speak to what you're talking about. They got their Richard Sherman, Sauce Gardner. They've got a lot of the things that we're talking about, and they got a quarterback, so they feel like they can, you know, do that for a long period of time. I think that's the reason they do that. And they're bringing him along slowly. Again, he ended the year last year well. He got hurt in the middle of the year. This year he was hurt early on in the year. They should have been 0-3 without him to start the year. 0-3. I mean, if Cleveland doesn't shit, piss, and a bunch of other things down their leg, they're 0-3. I mean, So that's where it's just, it's
what
weird.
What else you can do? Well, I think you have it covered.
You might be able to puke down that leg too. I don't know. All right. But either way, that's where that's where I'm a little surprised by it. And I know it wasn't good, and it gets personal for the Jets fans because they're so sick of the Patriots beating them. And I understand that. But they got to help Zach Wilson too. They got to help him a little bit. It's the game is not made very easy for him, Mike, and they playing in the windiest, one of the windiest games of the year, and they threw the ball down the field more than anybody in football in this game the other day, other than two teams in the whole sport. So that's the other thing you go, oh, so wait, we get to play the Patriots who are all over our stuff. We can't protect you. We can't run the ball. It's 30-mile-per-hour winds, and we're going to ask you to be one of the most aggressive throwers in football today. Oh, okay. Great, Coach. Thanks. Thanks for that. The recipe of success there. That's got to help me. That's all I'm saying. Again, it's not good, and I'm not trying to like totally defend it here, but I think the criticism has gone a little crazy.
All I know is this.
Yeah.
I don't know much, but I do know this. In back-to-back games, the Patriots have held the Colts to 3 and gotten Frank Reich fired. They've held the Jets to 3 and possibly gotten Zach Wilson benched.
Yeah, right.
Kirk Cousins, they're going to get you next in 2 nights. Who in Minnesota is going to end up out of a job and or benched after Bill Belichick and the Patriots get done with him in 2 nights? And boy, I can't wait. I think I'm going to have some extra turkey and just sleep through that game. Here are some Jets players in the locker room voicing support for Zach Wilson, notwithstanding all of the criticism that has been sent his way.
Lakin, what's the belief level in Zach right now inside the locker room?
I mean, it's high. He's our quarterback. What do you mean?
You know Zach Hart as a defense. He's a leader of our team. He's a great player, great person inside and out. He don't have to do anything when it comes down to covering up himself or doing anything that the media spit out. Because we know how hard he come in to work every day. He know the things he put on the line to for this team and for the offense and defense and special and the organization itself. So we all have faith in Zach. We all love Zach, and we all are part of this team. That's one of our brothers, and we're going to stick by him through hell or high water. So
we have all the confidence in the world in Zach Wilson.
Okay. But that needs to be universal. That needs to be universal, and you need more guys behind him, and you need Zach Wilson to not shoot himself in the foot with the things he says publicly and whatever he's doing in the locker room to spark the report from Connor Hughes of SNY. And I don't know whether it's right or wrong. All I know is it's published on SNY.
Right.
He's credentialed. He works for them. I got no reason to doubt what he's reporting, that in the locker room, you know, he's acting as if he's not part of the problem, and it's pissing guys off. And look, guys are already inclined to be pissed off anyway after that game. They go out and they fight and they scratch and they claw, and they think they're finally going to end that ridiculous losing streak to the Patriots, and it all falls apart in a stunning moment where Marcus Jones returns a punt for a touchdown, fueled at the very end by what should have been an illegal block. So I can understand why people are pissed off.
Yeah, they're emotional. I mean, we are in the era of quarterbacks, and we kind of more now than ever just always give them the blame or, you know, all the accolades in the world. We do. And again, he needs to play better. There's no doubt about that. I get that. But damn, he's played some good defenses, and they got to help him out, and he's not the only issue on that team. I mean, that's where I defend it a little bit here, and we'll see where it goes. But, yeah, the Jets still got talent and still got something going here. And, in a lot of ways, it's going to be interesting to see them. This is an issue of, you know, again, I know the play is not great, but they're 5-2 with them playing, and things are going positive, and it's the fan base that's just they're rabid. It's I don't know, they have an issue with it. They don't like Zach Wilson, whatever, and it looks like this issue might be a real issue for their football team. It's going to affect them on the field. By the way, everything is reacted up here in the New York area about Zach Wilson and the Jets.
Unfortunately for us at NBC, it's too late for the NFL to flex Joe Flacco and Trevor Siemian into primetime on Sunday night. Unfortunately, we won't get to enjoy that matchup. Or Mike White, the one-game Hall of Fame wonder of the New York Jets, who may get another chance. We'll see how that goes. Let's take a break. When we return, some playoff contenders, including one in particular, had bad showings in Week 11. Do we see red flags, or is it just an aberration? We'll discuss that next here on this Tuesday edition of PFT Live.
I mean, it just sucks that we lost this bad, you know? I mean, if we just lost by 3, 7, 10 points, you know, it wouldn't be as bad as before, you know? People lose games, you know? We're not expected to go undefeated for the rest of the season, you know? Things happen, you know, it's the NFL. You know, there's good teams that we're playing. It's just the fact that we lost by 37 points at home. So it's just embarrassing just being in that type of situation.
Justin Jefferson, just 1 week after regular season win for the ages in Buffalo, the Vikings suffer their worst loss since October 6, 1963 at home. Worst loss at home in that long, 37 points. And, you know, Chris, before we get to whether or not these are red flags or just a blip on the radar screen, one thing that has bugged me this week about Vikings coach Kevin O'Connell and multiple players, they're playing the we're still 8-2 card. I don't like that. I don't like that. You're 0-1. You just got stomped by 37. Oh, we're still 8-2. You're going to be 8-3 with that attitude, and you'll be able to say Friday, we're still 8-3. I just don't like that organizational reaction. We're still 8-2. For all that really matters, you may as well be 0-10 because you look like and played like you're 0-10 on Sunday. So that's my reaction. Maybe you disagree, but it's bothering me to see player after player and coach after coach saying we're still 8-2.
Well,
that doesn't matter, and yeah, it ain't going to matter to Bill Belichick.
No. I think sometimes as a coach, you got to try to find a way to change the thought, change the narrative a little bit for your players. I could see them maybe just trying to beat that in a little bit to take away from, wait, you're not that team that lost by 37. Don't forget, we're still 8-2 and done good things, right, Mike? I could see that being the message. I've been there.
I understand what you're saying, the way you put it. I get it.
You know, hey, let's swipe this away. That was you're more this team. You're 8-2 still. You know, that wasn't us on Sunday. I could see him trying to change the narrative in everybody's brain in the locker room that way to think a little.
They got
to
do something.
Yeah.
They got to do something because the Patriots are coming.
I know.
In 2 days.
I know. You're nervous. You're shaking in your boots. I know.
I'm not. I accept that it's going to be probably worse. Jefferson said at one point yesterday, we want to get this bad taste out of our mouths. Well, we're glad to be playing on Thursday night. Yeah, that bad taste could be replaced with something even worse than that, the way things went Sunday. All right, so red flag or blip on the radar. Let's start with the Vikings being blown out by the Cowboys and being held to only 3 points. No Christian Darrisaw Thursday night. He suffered his second concussion in 2 games. Once he exited, it was open season on Kirk Cousins, who was sacked a career high 7 times. Jefferson said yesterday, we got to get rid of the ball faster. Easier said than done. Is it exposure of frauds, or is it something that the Vikings can turn around, Chris?
Well, no, I mean... Yeah, it's a tough one. I'm going to say it's a blip on the radar. Gosh, I want to say there's a little bit of both to this one. I don't think that's your team there. You're not 37 points worse than the Dallas Cowboys. You're not that, right? And I don't know if there's a team that we're going to see here down the stretch that can do that again to your Minnesota Vikings here. You know, there is some things to be worried about overall. It's the third game in a row you guys have been outplayed. That would be the thing that I bother. Yeah, you won 2 of them, and that's great. But I do think, you know, overall, I'm going to say a blip on the radar, but how could you not be a little concerned about the way your defense has looked, right? And I think the other thing that's just a little maybe concerning is I don't know if the run game and the offensive line is as good as everybody thinks they are. That's the other thing, too. I think everybody just thought, well, wait, Green Bay ran it like this on Dallas, and Minnesota should, too. And I just want to be like, well, I know you got a Dalvin Cook, but Green Bay's they're a much better running football team than you guys are this year. You guys really haven't been all that dominant in the run game if you really look at it. So there's some concerns there, but I'm still going to go blip on the radar for now.
You know what Sunday reminded me of? Where were you in 2011? Were you
I was
in between playing and
I was
coaching?
Done. I was done. I was actually just sitting at home in Nashville, Tennessee at that point.
It reminded me of the way that the Patriots handled Tebow Mania. Because in 2011, it was constant Shamrock up the ass.
Right.
Down 15 in the fourth quarter, no big deal, win a game. Down 7 with every possible circumstance conspiring against you, no big deal, still find a way to win. Tim Tebow would pull it together and get the victory. So the only way to deal with that was to completely overwhelm the Broncos from the moment the game began and make it so bad that by the time the magic hour came, there was nothing you could do. There was no magic in the world that could reverse it. And that's what I thought of on Sunday. The only way to keep the Vikings from having the Shamrock up their butt is to kick their butt so thoroughly that no number of Shamrocks out there is going to make a difference. And Belichick's the one who provided that lesson to the world. He did it in the regular season. Remember that really hyped Broncos-Patriots regular season game where, you know, the tug of war between, I remember this well, CBS and NBC, we're going to get to primetime, is it going to stay in 425? It was like the most coveted regular season game ever. And then they got together in the playoffs, both games. The Patriots destroyed the Broncos, giving Tebow no chance to pull off any magic at the end. And I think Belichick's going to bring that same mindset. We got to knock these guys out, or they're going to find a way to, you know, some crazy chain of events, and we're going to lose the game. That's my concern. And that the defense isn't good enough to keep that from happening, especially if the offense can't produce points while the other team's offense is getting the ball down the field and scoring points.
Right. I think, you know, you said it. I think those are the concerns. You're right. And you ran into a team, you know, where I think you were fortunate in Buffalo. They don't really run the ball that well. And the Washington football team is kind of in the process of getting a run game going 3 weeks ago, and it was just turning the corner. You know, that was the first time we saw you have to play a team that, like, well, they can do both kind of good. And how are you going to stop that, Minnesota? Oh, well, you're not going to stop anything. They're going to run and throw all over you. And I think that's where it's a little concerning, you know. But, again, I'm still going to go blip on the radar. I don't think that's what they are. But, you know, I think what we're saying is that there are some things that can potentially be red flags here for Minnesota down the stretch. And we'll see if, you know, they kind of arise here down with some of these tougher games on the schedule.
My son believes that 8-2 is going to become 9-8 by the time it's all said and done. So you wouldn't guess that he's my son based upon that level of pessimism. The Giants sparking some pessimism by losing at home by double digits to the kneecap biting Detroit Lions. Turnovers, miscues, just getting gashed by the Detroit running game. Saquon Barkley had 15 carries, none went longer than 4 yards. Too many penalties, interceptions by Daniel Jones. Is that a blip on the radar, or is it a red flag long term for the New York Football Giants?
I think it's a red flag. You know, I know. You know, you just talked about your Minnesota Vikings team, and Alex, your son, thinks they could end up being 9-8. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if we were sitting here 4 weeks from now, and we're sitting here going, "Hey, the Giants are 7-6." I mean, with Dallas, Washington, Philadelphia, Washington, Minnesota, Indianapolis, Philadelphia on the schedule down the stretch. Again, you know, to me it's a red flag because they're going to start playing some teams now that, yeah, just playing a game of, wait, we didn't turn the ball over is not going to be good enough. You're going to have to go out and win these games. Like, you're going to have to make plays and move the ball. And you see a Detroit team who's, you know, playing some better defense, and a Giants team that didn't have a passing offense to take advantage of the bad Lions defense. They could kind of go all in on stopping the run. You know, the Giants, you know, like we've talked about all year, they have to control the clock, run the ball really well, not turn the ball over, have Graham Gano make a few 50-yard field goals, and hope that Wink Martindale and the defense can create some chaos and make a play or two there and turn the ball over. But they're not even that great on that side of the ball. So, I mean, there's concerns for me with the Giants, and I think it's more of a red flag.
I think that schedule is really the reddest of the red flags.
Right?
Two games against the Commanders, two games against the Eagles, one more against the Cowboys, and you're in one of the best divisions in football, and somebody's going to end up in the basement,
yeah.
And somebody may not make it to the playoffs, even though you would say they're good enough to get there. And the Commanders, I would be very concerned. A great game this weekend.
Yeah.
They get together for the first of two times, the Giants and the Commanders, and they've
or
had some
weekend.
Great battles. These
yeah.
division rivalries, is it next weekend?
Well, they play
is
Dallas on Thanksgiving this weekend. You know.
Oh, that's right, and then
yeah,
it's next weekend.
It's
yeah,
next
yeah, you're
year.
Right, you're yeah, right. Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, who does Washington play this weekend? They play. I thought they played somebody.
They do
good.
Play somebody
right,
this weekend.
Right.
The one thing I know is they are
Falcons,
playing somebody
right.
this weekend. They are playing somebody.
They are playing somebody. It's somebody. You're right. It's the Falcons, and then it gets more difficult for the
yeah,
Commanders.
Right.
Yeah. How can I forget? How can I forget the Giants and the Cowboys?
I don't know. I'm shocked.
This is the best slate of NFL Thanksgiving games that I can remember.
Right?
I mean, think about it. And the power rankings are coming out just after the show. Five of the six teams playing on Thursday are in the top 10.
That's amazing.
And the Lions
and
are
the Lions
red
are
hot right
in a row.
Now with
right.
three straight victories.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, it is.
It was 2006
yeah.
the triple header started. I don't even have to go back and look. I could just tell you viscerally, this is the best trio of Thanksgiving games we've ever had. When the games arrive.
Yeah, right.
And I remember when the schedule came out, I was like, oh, God, I guess they're taking full advantage of the captive audience this year. Giants, Cowboys, who wants to see that? Vikings, Patriots, who wants to see that? Right? Oh, the Bills 72, the Lions 2. Who wants to see that? So,
yeah,
different
I don't remember three in a row like this. I'm excited. I really am. I mean, I cannot wait to be sitting on the couch eating hors d'oeuvres and stuff like that at 12 o'clock on Thursday morning. It's gonna be a fun day.
Do you have hors d'oeuvres on Thanksgiving? You really did have a laissez-faire upbringing.
Well, like is there gonna be
hors
some
d'oeuvres?
Like, well, like, you know, carrots and celery with
hors
like
divorce
dip? Yeah, like in some chips and dip.
Why
and
do you fill up on that crap?
Well, I got a little we're a late Thanksgiving family, right? All right, first off, Big Phil has to do his CBS crap yeah. and do the pregame show. So we got to wait for him to get home. We're the type of family that doesn't – we'll be lucky if I can get my sister and her family there before 4:30 or 5 o'clock. We won't eat dinner till 6 o'clock on Thanksgiving, which is totally crazy.
Well, wait, you're going to eat dinner during the Giants-Cowboys game?
And then
are
I
you
have,
kidding well, me?
Exactly. And then I get up. They you know, people get mad. Oh, you're getting up? And I'm like, yeah, I'll go see what's going on in the game because we'll eat in the dining room and there's no TV there. Right, so you know, that's going to be an issue. Certainly during the Giants game, they're going to have to deal with me moving around a little bit.
You know, the best news, though, NBC has a game on Thursday night. Neither of us is working.
That's great. That's a great thing. They're getting us back on Christmas, though. Don't you worry. We'll be there
not
for
you.
That.
Not you.
No, not me?
I'll be here.
Oh.
I'm coming down my chimney
yeah.
on Christmas. I'm not going to 30 Rock.
Oh, geez.
Or wherever it is.
I am,
no,
I think.
Oops.
Yeah.
All right. What's going on with Matthew Stafford? We will be discussing that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Every Stearns & Foster mattress is handcrafted with the finest materials for irresistible comfort every single night. Now, save up to $800 on select adjustable mattress sets only at stearnsandfoster.com. Lesser savings may apply.
Whoa!
It's a Thanksgiving tradition like none other. The National Dog Show presented by Purina. Thousands of good boys and good girls compete for the title of Best in Show. Thanksgiving at Shake That Off, noon Eastern, NBC, and Peacock.
It's a big deal.
I was saying this yesterday. I want another dog. I don't think I'm going to get one, but I want another dog. I'm trying. I've begun, like Ralphie in A Christmas Story.
Well, why do you want another one?
Seed.
Why do you want another one? What's like the one's not enough? Why do you need two?
I want another one. I want one that is mine because Macy is Jill's. Everywhere Jill goes, Macy goes. But we know what's going to happen. If we get a second one, Jill's going to have two dogs
yeah,
up her butt
right.
wherever she goes.
Yeah, right, so, right. Yeah. Just it doesn't seem like you're
the only time Macy has interest in me on two different occasions. One, when Jill's not home. And two, when it's dinner time and we're eating, because for some reason she perceives me to
be the
softer mark.
You're the sucker.
Jill's the alpha.
Right.
So Jill's not giving her anything. She comes and she sits by me waiting for me to give her pizza crust. And you know, this is my dog loves pizza crust, and wow. I love my dog.
Wow.
So I don't eat my pizza crust anymore.
Wow.
And I have to like there are times where it's like I come out and heat up a piece of pizza from I love having leftover pizza around, and I like take it into my office and close the door so the dog doesn't follow me in there. That's the only time I get to enjoy pizza crust, because the dog's around. I'll say I'm not giving you anything, and like 5 seconds later I'm giving her the piece of pizza.
Wow, yeah, that's how you got to get a German Shepherd. They won't beg or anything. They'll listen and they won't want to disappoint. My German Shepherd, like a German Shepherd, will not even eat pizza crust. It won't. Like, he won't do that. It's got to be either the dog food or some sort of kind of meat. Maybe he can get him a carrot or a vegetable a little bit, but won't eat, like, bread. It's not going to happen there. So it's interesting that Macy can just eat that like that. I'm actually surprised.
She loves pizza crust, and she loves Italian bread, and she loves pepperoni rolls, but we take out the pepperoni. We haven't, because every once in a while we give her something she shouldn't, and then somebody's got to clean up a mess on the floor, and it's usually me. All right. Speaking of messes, the Rams, has there been a Super Bowl champion that has fallen this far this fast? I can't think of one. I'm sure there's got to be one at some point in the last 55 years that just completely went off the rails.
I don't remember to this.
The Rams, holy crap.
Right? I don't remember to this. Honestly, the only time I can even – I've been thinking about this a little bit. I got to think about it more, but like – you know, the 1987 Giants, the year after they won the Super Bowl, but because of the strike, they had a bad strike team. They had a bunch of scabs and weren't good, so they lost like every game through that period there. You know, but other than that, Mike, I mean, you're right. I can't remember an ex-Super Bowl team basically being at the halfway point and us going, it's over, the season's over, and there's no way they're going to the playoffs. I can't remember that.
The Steelers, the year after they won the one for the thumb, Super Bowl 40, they didn't make the playoffs.
No.
I can't remember how bad they were that year. The Patriots, after they won their first one, didn't make the playoffs in 2000.
But they were hot at the end of the year.
Tom Brady had a three-game losing streak, but they almost got there.
They did.
But this has just been a complete and total implosion, and this traces back to F them picks, because you don't have depth. You don't have guys who can step in when guys are injured. You're not developing young players because you have effed your picks. And here we are. And to make matters worse, Cooper Kupp's already out. Now Matthew Stafford is back in the concussion protocol. I was told that last night. This has been treated by the Rams as some sort of a state secret. I don't like this, and I think the NFL needs to intervene. The NFL needs to make it clear that you can't take a day and a half to figure out whether or not a guy's in the concussion protocol. And this is a message that needs to be sent to the team doctors and to the independent neurological consultants who are involved in this process. I mean, I'd like to think you can figure out within a half hour or so whether or not a guy needs to be in the protocol. And if you can't figure it out, then he needs to be in the protocol. If there's any doubt, just put him in the protocol. This has been so bizarre to me. As of last night, late afternoon, Eastern time, they still didn't know. And finally, someone told me last night that he's in the protocol. They don't want to admit that he had a concussion. He's in the concussion protocol, and Sean McVay won't say he had a concussion. Sean, it's not the sprained ankle protocol. Of course he has a concussion. He's got to go through all these steps before he can play again. I don't get it. The whole thing's weird to me. And we got to care about the player as a patient, as a human being. And he's had two concussions now in two games. And they got to make sure he's okay. And it's just so odd that it took so long to get to this point. It's a bad look for everyone, and I'm glad they finally realized we just need to put this guy in the protocol.
Yeah, it is a bad look. I mean, the Rams don't look good in general right now anyways. Look bad. And Matthew Stafford, I mean, he's getting beaten to a pulp. We're getting to the point here with the way the team looks and what's going on and – you know, the investment they've made in Stafford to where I almost got to start. You got to start thinking like, when do we just, know when to hold them and know maybe it's time to fold them and start worrying about 2023 a little bit. I mean, again, yes, he played great on Sunday. He led them on two touchdown drives, bombed the 2-2 Atwell, another drive where he just was getting killed and making one big throw after another. But I mean, they got nothing. They got nothing, and he has been getting killed all year long. It is. The whole situation's a little weird out there, and again, I don't know where it gets any better, and they're not going to be able to protect him when he gets back, and I just kind of wonder at what point do they start thinking about, you know, why rush him out there? Why even put him out there at all? Maybe he's getting killed the last 2 years, really. Why don't we save his body and just regroup for next year?
Well, here's one of the big problems as it relates to having a bunch of backups on the field, backups who aren't maybe as good as they could be or should be because you got all your money invested in a handful of stars. They have, coming up, they have a big tent late afternoon game at the Chiefs, which I don't know that, you know, that's a spot where you get 25 to 30 million viewers for a big game late afternoon, 4:25 p.m. start. I don't know what the alternative is in that spot this weekend, but they're at the Chiefs, and they have a Thursday night game coming up week 14 against the Raiders, a Monday night game at the Green Bay Packers, standalone game in the middle of the afternoon on Christmas against the Broncos. What a stinker that's going to be. And then they're scheduled for New Year's Day, 8:20 p.m. on NBC. Got a feeling that one won't hold. That's a game at the Chargers, a home game against the Chargers, even though the Chargers are the home team. All those games now, we've got this rash of single spot, big profile national TV games. This is one of the last teams you want to watch.
Yeah.
They're going to have to do something. There's only so much they can do to move these around because the Thursday and Monday games aren't going anywhere. And that Christmas Day game isn't going anywhere. For as great as Thanksgiving games are going to be, hey, that middle game on Christmas, oh boy, that one shapes up to be not good at all.
Excuse me. Sorry. I had a sneeze.
God
there.
Bless you.
Thank you very much.
God
no,
bless you.
It doesn't. And again, they're not necessarily a very fun team to watch either. The defense, we know it's still damn good and can give you some issues, and I'm sure it'll be a pain in the butt for, you know, this Chiefs football team this weekend a little bit. But, yeah, it's the offense that you just go, they got no chance. You know, the O-line is just, it's one of the worst in football. No running game. We know the issues at receiver with no Cooper Kupp. There was issues at receiver when they had Cooper Kupp. So it's falling apart fast. And, yeah, I don't see, like, anything that says, well, they'll give one last stand and turn things around here down the stretch and win a few of these football games
nope.
and it'll look respectable. Yeah, I'm with you. Nope is right.
Nope.
I could see them, you know, losing the majority of these.
Not unless Bryce Perkins plays like Kurt Warner in 1999. The only problem is he doesn't have all the guys around him that Kurt Warner did. So that's not going to happen, assuming that Stafford misses this week and maybe more. They told me to take a break, but I do need to say this. Do need to say this because I did get a little vindication last night. NFL media reported that Justin Fields, the Bears quarterback, has a dislocated left shoulder. I was told by a very trustworthy source, not to be confused with the sources that usually lie to me, that it wasn't dislocated. And then Shefty at halftime last night of 49ers Cardinals saying it was not dislocated. So thank you, Shefty. For breaking the
Shefty
tie.
Shefty saving Florio's butt once again.
Of Christmas
Look at him.
Chocolates. You don't have to send me Christmas chocolates this year. Not that you ever have. I'll accept that instead. Let's take a break. Somebody's out in Denver. It's not Nathaniel Hackett yet. One of the players is gone. We'll talk about that when PFT Live continues right after this.
With Melvin, you know, he's a guy he's a true pro. He's done a lot of good stuff here at the Denver Broncos and scored some touchdowns for us this year. And we thought it was best for the team. And we moved on, and I wish him the best of luck. And I think it's great for him to have a fresh start. But with the running backs, it'll be Marlon Mack. He'll be up. And then Divine Zigbo, we're looking to see if we can get him up also, along with Latavius.
He scored some touchdowns for us. It's not quite the same as all he does is score touchdowns. He has two this year. He had five fumbles. That's why Melvin Gordon is out with the Denver Broncos. I mean, he'd been there. This was his third year. He had 10 total touchdowns in 2020, 10 in 2021, two this year, but the five fumbles. Inopportune times. That's what eventually got rid of Melvin Gordon in Denver. And look, Chris, it's a harsh reality of the business. Every day, teams are basically firing employees. They are cutting players. And that's why I don't feel bad talking about maybe it's in the best interest of the team at some point to cut Nathaniel Hackett. It's the same standard. What's best for the team? And if you can snap your fingers and get rid of a player, as coaches do all the time, there's going to be a time where that standard of what's best for the team may apply to you too. And we know that's going to happen. It's coming. It happened, you know, 6-7 times last year with owners deciding to move on, that it was in the best interest of the team. So that term gets used very broadly to justify a lot of stuff. And that stuff is guys being politely asked to gather their stuff and get the hell out.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't see it a whole lot in the league, especially with a guy like Melvin Gordon, who's been around and, you know, still has some value as a runner. He's still big. He still runs pretty well. You know, his days of being a superstar or a top running back are gone. But the fumble issue has been an issue his whole career. And, you know, you said it, inopportune time. This was a huge moment in the football game. You know, I mean, one, yeah, you're, you know, supposed to get the first down. You don't get that, okay? And then they have to end up kicking the field goal. And then they miss the field goal. So there they were in a moment where it should have been first and goal from the 2-yard line. And you're going to have three cracks at scoring a touchdown and really putting the Raiders in a tough spot with that good Denver Broncos defense. And they didn't do that. Let alone, I mean, you could sit there and go, hey, he doesn't fumble against Seattle at the 1-yard line. Good chance they win that football game. You know, and there's one or two others that are tough as well. So, you know, I think that's where they just looked at it and said, okay, we can't depend on you. We don't trust you. We got to move on. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. Melvin Gordon, I would think someone's going to pick him up, though. He's going to have some value to a team that's looking to make the playoffs and needs to add to their running back roster.
Yeah, but does the fumbling problem get solved immediately? That's the issue.
No, it's going
to
be.
You don't want that to happen to
scary,
you if you're
right.
A contender in a playoff game.
No, I know.
I remember back when, you know, Adrian Peterson was good enough to overcome it, but he had a hell of a fumbling problem in 2009. And I remember harping on Paul Allen, who was voice of the Vikings back then. I'd be on his radio show with him every week. And I said, at some point this year, Adrian Peterson is going to fumble at the worst possible time, and it's going to screw up the season. And you know what? If Adrian Peterson hadn't fumbled a couple of times against the Saints, they would have easily won that game.
Yeah.
He had a couple of Melvin Gordon moments in that game.
Yeah,
so,
he did.
It's something you don't want to bring to your team if you have a contender, unless you just have an absolute necessity. So we'll see how that goes. We'll have to go through waivers. After the trade deadline, every player who's released, regardless of experience level, goes through waivers. And if he clears waivers, he can sign with any team that chooses to offer him a job and that he chooses to sign with. Nathaniel Hackett has chosen to give up the offensive play calling. He addressed yesterday what it was like to go through a game without being the one to call the offensive plays. Here's what he had to say.
I really liked it. I thought it was fun to be part of a little bit more integral with the defense, right there for Ejero if we needed timeouts, penalties, all that stuff, and special teams offense, just being around the guys more, trying to get the crowd pumped up. They were amazing last night. I mean, they brought a lot of juice. I thought that was critical. And so it was different, something I'll have to get used to and get used to not touching the button. But I thought it was really good. I think right now as we evaluate, you know, going into the game plan together, I think there's still going to be a lot of areas that I'll work in, and I'll continually help develop that and be in the quarterback room, continually helping with that, but not having to be in there full time. Same thing with the group. So it allowed me to kind of bounce around, do some other things when I was missing some things, whether it be meetings or other things come up. So I think it'll free me up a little bit. And also at the same time, I'll still be there to help those guys as much as possible. When we were in the Tennessee game, I didn't feel right. So I think that's why I really kind of put my foot down and decided to kind of move it over to Clint. And I'm excited. I'm excited to see what Clint and Justin can put together.
Look, I know that it's been characterized as it was his decision. I just wonder how much of it is the balloon basket's being weighed down. I better throw something overboard if I want this thing to fly.
Right.
And you know, we've seen it with Jerry Rosberg being brought in to help with game management. And it's just one thing after another. And as we see Mike McDaniel doing really well in Miami, Brian Daboll doing well with the Giants, Kevin O'Connell doing well with the Vikings, it's just not a good look to have this many adjustments that you're making on the fly and you keep losing. That's the other side of it too, Chris. They made this change and they still lost the game.
No, I know. It doesn't look great. It doesn't. You know, but the still all these changes and this is where I defend Nathaniel Hackett a little bit, are all being done because of one reason once again. Oh, well, we all got to change his perception because of Russell Wilson. I mean, that's what it is. That's where, again, I defend him a little bit because of that. Where, hey, I'll give up play calling duties. Well, why? I mean, you've been calling plays, and I watch the film, and I've done some things on social media that you know about, and we talk about, where I go, people are open. You know, every game that everybody does of Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos, the announcers point out people are open. You know, but, oh, I got to give up the play calling duties because of just the perception of the situation. You know, that's what's happened here. It's the politics. The guy that they are paying the most, that they have put all the assets into and made the biggest move, has been the biggest failure for their football team. And you don't, you can talk to anybody in football, and the rumors that are coming out of there from the players in the locker room and everything, everything points to that. Let alone, we went through a game here last weekend again where the biggest mistake of the football game, other than maybe Melvin Gordon's fumble right there, was by the $45 million quarterback who threw an incompletion with a minute and 40 seconds left and didn't take a sack, had an open receiver for a first down and didn't want to throw it to him. I mean, things where you go, you know, I'd love to blame the coach, but you've played enough football here. There's no excuse. There's no excuse. And then to make that change the whole dynamics of the end of the football game to where you gave the Raiders a chance to go down and beat you, let alone if you take the sack, you're going to make it dicey to whether the field goal can even happen and they can get in position to tie the game. So, again, it's the blunders, and I don't want to jump on one guy here, but it's the horse in the room. As far as the Broncos are concerned, is that the quarterback is not playing good
at all. Ride.
Yeah, let's not ride. Right.
Well, there's more we could say, but we need to take a break. Bottom line is they traded for him. They either got conned or they didn't do their due diligence. They paid him when they had seen
some
presumably
issues.
Enough in training camp that they should have wondered, maybe we should wait a year on this. And, you know, there are still people who think that when Nathaniel Hackett became the coach, it was all part of a plan to get Aaron Rodgers there as the quarterback, not Russell Wilson. And you wonder, I still think that Aaron Rodgers basically was the guy who said, I'm going to go skydiving. And when it was time to jump out of the plane, he decided not to do it. maybe Hackett didn't think he was going to get Russell Wilson. Maybe he thought he was going to have Aaron Rodgers. Not that Rodgers' play this year would have been any better based upon what we've seen in Green Bay. Let's go ahead and take a break. The Week 11 Statement Draft, Thursday, Sunday, and or Monday. We'll do that when PFT Live continues right after this. The World Cup continues. You can see it on Telemundo and on Peacock. It's in Spanish. Team USA tied Wales 1-1 in the opening matchup on Monday. Next up, it's USA against England, Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern. Telemundo and Peacock in Spanish. Better than Rosetta Stone. You learn a little Espanol. I had 3 years of it, and I still don't have it. It's been a long time. It's been 40 years. 40 years removed from 3 years of Spanish means I really don't know any Spanish. I know this, though. It's time for the Week 11 Statement Draft. Chris, who do you have?
Oh!
Now, don't do this to me.
Oh!
Why?
Yes. Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I mean, the whole Cowboys organization, the statement they made of just saying, you know, Mike Florio, that number one team you got in the Bauer rankings, that statement is wrong. So we're going to change those rankings for you a little bit. We're going to do it convincingly. No problem here. We're going to make sure that they're nowhere near the top three after this one. So the Dallas Cowboys, we know that's not really the Vikings. And I don't know if Dallas is really that good, but I think it does show you what they're capable of. I think that's the biggest thing. And, you know, the adjustments they made on the defensive side of the ball, the talent they have there. You know, Dak Prescott, the way he threw the football, Pollard, the way he looks. I mean, how can you not come away with that and just go, man, Dallas has got one of the more talented teams in football.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It would have been mine. A total organizational statement, an ass-kicking. And you may want to save some of those points for Thursday against the Giants or some future game. And, you know, my son and I were texting about this yesterday, too. if the Vikings and the Cowboys cross paths again, maybe you catch the Cowboys a little flat-footed because it was so easy last time. Maybe you punch them in the mouth early and you get a different outcome, although I wouldn't expect a different outcome, not after what we saw on Sunday. I'm going to go Travis Kelce, the Kansas City Chiefs. He made the pregame statement with the Fonzie T-shirt, football family and Fonzie, and then he had three touchdowns in the game. He had 100 yards receiving, most ever for a tight end. And that guy, it's just amazing. And he's kind of got that Mahomes quality where he moves among the other players. He's not the fastest guy, but he knows where the openings are, and he knows how to get to where he wants to be before the other guys can get to him. And he's just, you can't say enough good things about Travis Kelce, the football player, and it made it a lot easier to not have Tyreek Hill because they still have Travis Kelce, and he still gets it done, even without Hill there to take some of the attention.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. I mean, him and Mahomes, what they do I don't know what else to say. It's one of the greatest combinations we've ever seen in football. I mean, Kelce's a first ballot Hall of Famer. So was Mahomes. You know, the way those guys play in clutch moments, I'll add Chris Jones to that first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion. They just rise to the occasion in every big moment. And Mahomes right now is the MVP of football, in my opinion, for what he's done. I don't mean to go like I'm gonna go with Shanahan here and the statement that he made last night. I think that's where I want to go. Just the 49ers and showing you again that the capabilities of that offense, and with the way Jimmy Garoppolo is playing, and we know the run game special, but it's all the other tricks and things they got to go along with it and the defense. A lot like the Cowboys conversation. It's just the 49ers, I think, put everybody on notice last night. It's not easy to win by 28 points in the NFL, let alone 28 points and everybody's out in the fourth quarter. I think it just shows, like the Cowboys, the potential this team has when they're kind of hitting on all cylinders.
I'm going to go back to Thursday.
Oh, damn it.
Some love.
Damn it.
Traylon Burks.
Yeah.
Were you going to take Traylon Burks?
I was going to take the Titans and get into that a little. Yeah.
Seven catches for 111 yards.
Yeah.
You know, he was put under a very difficult amount of pressure by being expected to replace A.J. Brown. And that play at the end with 2:04 left. Brilliant play. This is the kind of aggressiveness that makes sense. You catch a team flat-footed. You catch a team napping. They expect you to run the ball in that spot. You know the clock is stopping after that play anyway.
Exactly.
What the hell?
Exactly.
Let's throw one deep. That was brilliant by Mike Vrabel. So Traylon Burks starting to come to life for the Titans and giving them a real option in the passing game with his 111 receiving yards. Let's take a break. We'll wrap up the show and wrap up the draft right after this. Week 11 statement draft. There are the first two rounds. We have one more to go each. Chris, what do you have?
I picked enough. I feel like I've picked enough teams, so I don't want to do that. I don't want to go there. I'm gonna go with Joe Burrow here in this one. You know, just the way they played in Pittsburgh, you know, won the game by 7, but really, you know, won by more than that. It was a little bit misleading, that final score. But just, again, the big plays, the not blinking, oh, wait, a big turnover, a big moment. T.J. Watt made an unbelievable interception, just comes back, keeps firing. When there's a big play to be had, he pulls the trigger, you know, but didn't force the issue, was patient underneath, throwing the ball to the running backs and stuff. I feel like Cincinnati is getting close to getting this thing on track and really rolling. I think they made a statement, especially Joe Burrow on Sunday.
And Ja'Marr Chase could be back soon, which makes a huge difference. How about Cordarrelle Patterson?
Ninth I like it.
Kick return touchdown of his career, sets a record. A guy who got started as a kick return specialist and couldn't really do anything else for the Vikings, and then started doing all these other things with other teams. And now he's primarily a running back. You never see him lined up out wide anymore. And he gets it done, but he still can take a kickoff to the house, and he did it for the ninth time. That's pretty. It's an all-time record. When you think of all the great return specialists, Chris, that's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, what a career, and how he's been used all over the field. It's very impressive. Congratulations.
And still going strong.
Yeah.
We're not going. We're done.
See ya.
Tomorrow. Have a great day.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.